and a half ago, I took a test that said that maybe my brain isn't as okay as I thought it was. And I have a family to think about, and my wife and I want to start having kids soon. That's what Bree says all the time.
I wonder if that woman from last week's about to complain about her 12-year-old being led astray by Daniel Bryan now. Welcome to episode 73 of European Uppercut on the DSJMP and Trending Topics Networks, a podcast that talks about professional wrestling. And this week, we've got emails! Woo! Moving on last week, we've got the Knots of Knockout news, and we're going to have a little bit of a chat about Daniel Bryan's departure from wrestling as well. That's a couple of other things we've got in store. But let's find out who's on the panel. First up, fresh from the world of the indie scene, PK is back with us.
Thanks for having me back. Look forward to it.
Good stuff. How are you doing? Doing good?
I'm doing good, yeah. It's a very successful Fight Club Pro show last Friday, which, fingers crossed, the next one on the 18th of March is going to be just as good. So, and no doubt I'll be on closer to the time to plug the hell out of that one. Which everyone should come to that one, because there's going to be a death match on UK soil.
As you do. Let's have a death match every week. No. Also with us this week, the man who said he was taking time off from the show, but he's been here every week since. It's Kai.
Yeah, it feels weird. I mean, it's been, what, 4 weeks now since I said that I was leaving? And yeah, it's not happened yet. I think some people might actually be quite upset with that.
Well, your mother probably. Anyway.
Oh, God.
But yes, we've got quite a wee bit to get into in this show. Let's not hang about. We've got a good few emails to get into. Anyone wants to send us an email, you certainly can. Send it to eurouppercut@gmail.com. If you want to send us a tweet on Twitter, send it to @TheEUPod. So let's find out who has been typing away on their inbox. First one comes to us by surprise, surprise, Andy Anderson. Where were you at, Andy, last week? Yeah, we noticed you were missing in action. Anyway, he says, cheerio, gents. I don't know if you guys across the pond watched the Super Bowl at all or watched the WWF Empty Arena halftime show in 1999. Kai, shut up. We all know you're probably sucking on your mum's teat back then, but it doesn't matter what you did. But I think it'd be great to bring back the WWE halftime show. Especially now they have a network where they can have a whole show dedicated to it. You could also have a separate streaming channel for it, like they did for the run over for the Daniel Bryan retirement speech. What do you gents think? An empty arena match or NXT small house show versus Coldplay, Beyonce, Bruno Mars lip sync act? What do you guys want to watch? That has been my European nickel. AA. P.S. Kata loves black women. Don't know where that came from, but hey ho, that's Andy at his best. I managed to get through a couple of his classic typos as well, but anyway, let's start with you, PK, on this one.
Yeah, I think it'd be a brilliant idea, because not necessarily the empty arena match side of things. I'd prefer them to do like a bit like a Beast and East special sort of thing, where they do like a half hour segment on the WWE Network, get a couple of main roster guys, a couple of NXT guys,
yeah,
and then put on a couple of matches. And then people can get back to the football when it's done. I think you'll get more eyes on the network and get more eyes on the NXT talent as well.
Yeah. I mean, certainly they could do something that's worthwhile. They could even have something like a 20-man battle royal or something for a title shot or something like that. So it's got a bit of value to it to encourage folk to watch the show and not just make it a throwaway couple of matches. Kai, your thoughts?
Yeah, I do actually think it's a very good idea. I mean, this is speaking as someone who isn't an American football fan. So I think that really we want to hear from people like Ant, and I think Wayne watches a little bit now as well.
Yeah.
They're the sort of people that really need to be answering this question. But yeah, I do think that this is a really good idea. And but do you think that it would attract football fans who aren't wrestling fans to check it out instead if they weren't, say, a Coldplay fan?
See, this is the thing. This is the thing you have to weigh up. One of the things about the half-time entertainment they do, it does get a huge audience generally, as well as a lot of the advertising they have for the show as well. It gets a lot of audience. And to put something on a different network to oppose it is quite a challenge. It would need to be something that had value, that had an interest to persuade folk to watch it. So perhaps it needs to be a big name main event match or something like that. But hey, who am I to say? But I certainly see value in doing something to try and kind of garner some audience. But is it wise to go against what's happening on such a huge platform? So no, I'm not sure. But if anybody else has any thoughts on that, please let us know on Twitter at the EU Pod or drop us an email replying to Andy on that. I'm going to go on to our next email, and it's a new emailer this week. And he says, "Dear Sirs, I write in order to improve your email total from last week of zero." Yeah, that wouldn't be hard. "There's been a certain amount of surprise from IWC over a couple of subjects which has left me perplexed, namely AJ Styles keeping his moniker and TNA managing to re-sign Jeff Hardy. Firstly, AJ Styles has a bloody great tattoo on his body of the letters AJ. Unless we're going to call him something pathetic like Alan Jones, then they're buggered. And secondly, Jeff Hardy spent an hour spewing his guts to Jim Ross recently, where not only did he outline his desire to return to WWE, but also stated he may well be out of action for the whole of 2016 if surgery was required on his injury. Hardly surprising that Vince decided not to sign him. Anyway, tremendous show, very enjoyable and a joy to listen to. Kindest regards, Prince Paul." So first up, Prince Paul, thank you for picking up the show. I know you only just recently got into it. Really appreciate having any new listeners. It's a great thing for us. So thank you very much. And thank you also for the email. I'm going to come to you, Kai, first of all. Were you surprised with AJ Styles keeping his name?
No, not since we've seen people like James Storm and Samoa Joe turned up. I think that AJ Styles got such a big name that you couldn't do it. But can you imagine that if at the Royal Rumble AJ Styles had turned up, they'd have called him Alan Jones, and he'd have come out to "I'm Walking in the Air"?
Oh dear! Oh dear!
Oh, that would have been the best trolling ever.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. Were you surprised to catch his name, PK?
No, I think the president was set by Samoa Joe, because he had such a big career outside of WWE. He's known by that name worldwide. Yeah. It's not like someone who's just been doing the US Indies. He's worldwide recognition. And same for AJ. That's why I'd be surprised if they renamed Nakamura, to be honest, as well, because of the way New Japan is and the way how popular it's become. It's got a worldwide audience now.
Yeah, there were some who were surprised that Hideo Itami changed his name when he came in. But at the time, that was the way they were going with everybody. But AJ Styles has not only bucked that trend, but going straight to the main roster, he's really shown that they've obviously got high expectations out of him. They're perceiving him as being a valuable commodity. So, you know, keeping his name is certainly good for bringing in audience from the indie scene or wherever that hasn't been watching the WWE.
We've also realised as well, it sells T-shirts. Look, both AJ's and Samoa Joe's T-shirts, the minute they debuted, they sold out.
Absolutely right. And look what it did for Samoa Joe. Took him from a really loose, flexible contract, and boom, here you go, have a great big contract.
Yeah.
Still needs to cut his hair.
Right, on that, I said to Kata today that I was going to address this conversation because I did have a little moan myself about that last week. Yeah. I know what it is about his hair that I don't like. It's not his hair that I don't like, because it was actually better on Raw this week. The problem is, it's the hair versus the hood. Once you put a hood on, it's roughing up your hair, it's messing up. As soon as you take that hood off in the way that he does, he whips it off, hair just gets thrown about, it's in his face, it all looks very unkempt and very messy. And that, when you're coming onto the stage at the start, unless you're a Briscoe, you know, that's not what we expect from you. So to me, that's all it is. It's just as simple as Stitch the Hood, just come out and burst onto the stage, make a big entrance. We don't need the hood. We've seen that now. Move on. So I don't think the hair is really that much. It's the hair versus the hood. That's all it is. Don't need the hood. Do it. Secondly, second point was about Jeff Hardy. Now, obviously, talking about he wanted to return to WWE, but obviously that's not happened. He's now signed another multi-year contract with TNA. A wise move, do you think, PK?
I think at the moment, the WWE landscape is so crowded with people who work that's what you would call the Jeff Hardy style, better than what Jeff Hardy can do now. He wouldn't get a look in. The same thing would happen with him as what's happened with the Dudleys. They came in, they had a big, oh, the Dudleys are back, and then within a couple of weeks, no one cares.
Come back to them in a wee minute. It's safe to say that the age Jeff's at, he has been tightening up a little bit on his moveset, restricting a few of those more precarious, dangerous moves that he would have done in the past. He recognises that, especially through the injuries he's had. Let's not even touch on the motorcycle accident. Kai, what are your thoughts on the Jeff Hardy situation?
If he's injured, WWE aren't going to want to bring him back. It's pretty much what Andy said then. Prince Paul. I can't really add anything more to that. They're not going to touch him if he's injured. Just look at this past week with Daniel Bryan. They don't want injured people.
It's not even that, just that. The injuries are stacking up left, right, and center. I don't know if you're covering the news, but it seems to have come out over the last little while before we started recording that even CM Punk's now looking at back surgery.
Yes, I did see that. I haven't covered that in the news because I literally found out just as we were going on air.
And then Titus O'Neil's been suspended as well, so the roster's shrinking.
Don't worry, we'll touch on that.
The roster, for such a packed roster, it's really getting a bit light because of all the injuries, and having a couple of suspensions here or there won't help anything.
WWE need to make a show all about injuries and take all these injured people and stick them in a room and just have them talking about shit or filming them on the recoveries and stuff like that. That's something for the WWE Network.
We've got Sin Cara back.
We could fill up half of Raw with that.
No, don't fill Raw with that. It's not what you want, Raw. It's exactly what you don't want. just one little thing on the Jeff Hardy thing. I think there was a point in time where you could have been interested in the Jeff Hardy thing, but at the moment there is so much going on. There's so much buzz about the new talent. They're having a return of talent. It's Jeff Hardy. I think we'd be very short-lived in terms of any enthusiasm, excitement. I think it's not the time. I think if you're going to do it, it needs to wait till next year. But I don't think it's going to happen at all to a certain extent. That's just my concern because he has shown himself to be injury-prone now. So all those high-flying moves are gone. What does that leave? His career is in a precarious position. It's now in the hands of TNA to manage. And what's that meaning, really? So, a bit confused as to what's going to happen with Jeff in the long term. Anyway, Prince Paul, thanks for sending that in. If anyone's got any other feedback they want to add to that, please send it in to us at the EU Pod on Twitter, or you can email us, uppercut@gmail.com. We've got one more email to get into. And it comes from Paul Fraser. Hi, guys. I'm just interested in knowing a few facts about you guys, so hope you don't mind the email. First of all, what got you guys interested in wrestling? Which promotions do you follow? Who are your favourite wrestlers? And what was your first pay-per-view you ever watched? Now, I'm going to pause the email there, and we'll just answer this question first of all, then we'll go to the next part. So I'm going to start on this one myself. Now, I've talked about this a couple of times on the show, but I'll just very quickly trim this down.
It's been a long time, hasn't it, since we've talked about this?
I mentioned mine again quite recently when we were talking about the Royal Rumble, because it was a Royal Rumble that actually really got me watching a WWE.
I remember now.
But originally I used to watch a lot of kind of British wrestling as a kid. My dad would put it on a Saturday and we'd watch Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks and all the rest of it going at it, and that was where I kind of got a flavour of wrestling. Then jumped to 1991, worked in drama at school, and someone brought in the Royal Rumble match on video, and the drama teacher felt it was actually quite appropriate to watch in the class, so we sat and watched that, which kind of answers one of the other questions you asked, Paul, which is what was your first pay-per-view you ever watched? So technically Royal Rumble 1991 was mine, before I'd really seen anything else. Next question, who are your favourite wrestlers? Now, that's an endless question. When it comes to defining a list like that, when it comes to wrestlers, I've got so many guys that I respect and rate in different ways that I could be here forever, but I'll just throw a few names into the hat. In terms of respecting his back catalogue of work and who he is, what he's done for the industry, you've got to take The Undertaker into consideration. Got to have a mention to the likes of Stone Cold. You've got to think about the current guys as well. Look at Kevin Owens, love what he's doing. Finn Balor as well. So many different guys I can mention at this point. Let's take it to you, Kai. What got you into wrestling and who your favourite? Oh, I missed a question, but I'll come back to it at the end.
What got me into wrestling? Yes. What got me into wrestling? I would have to say it was the two things. First of all, the PlayStation 2 at the time games. It was SmackDown. One of my friends had SmackDown Here Comes the Pain, and my other friend had SmackDown versus Raw, and we would just play them endlessly, and that's my first sort of remembering of getting into wrestling. Then came the wrestling figures, which I started collecting at that sort of age as well. But also the thing that really the next question was first pay-per-view, wasn't it? Now, this is where I'm always a bit sketchy. I must have been watching wrestling from around 2004, right. I think. However, I think the first pay-per-view that I watched in its entirety was actually a DVD of WrestleMania 22. I seem to remember my friend having that and lending it me to watch on DVD. The first one that I remember having, because what my dad used to videotape me the pay-per-views from then on, and I remember having Backlash. Maybe someone else will be better with the year. I think it might have been 2005 or 6 when it had Big Show versus Kane on it when he was doing his whole See No Evil thing. But I just remember having that on tape, lending it to my friend. And my friend took it home, and when I got it back, I put it in to watch it again, and it got to the Big Show versus Kane match, and suddenly it went to QVC, the shopping channel, because my friend's mum had taped over it, and that scarred me for life. So that's one of my earliest, my probably earliest wrestling memory would have to be being at my friend Greg's house. And there was, I can't remember it fully, but I remember there was Evolution in the ring, stood in front of a steel cage, and Triple H had his sledgehammer, and that is my earliest wrestling memory, but I don't know when from.
Right, okay, your favourite wrestler?
Right now? Now, Seth Rollins. He has been my favourite since The Shield debuted. I've just loved seeing him grow into the sort of amazing star that he has become. I've still got a hell of a lot of respect for John Cena because of I used to like him as a kid. Then, obviously, I went off him around 2010. I started feeling a bit old hat with it. And I could have maybe fallen off with wrestling, but I never did because then other stuff happened. I became fans of people like Edge and then later CM Punk. And as we'll probably chat about later in the show, Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan, for many years, was my favourite wrestler.
Okay, fair enough. We'll come back to his other question, which is which promotion do you follow once we've got the answers from PK. Now, so PK, starting with what got you interested in wrestling, your first pay-per-view, and who are your favourite wrestlers?
I remember watching WCW back in the day on British TV, and then the World of Sports stuff, which was just dying out as I started watching, and then... Got into WWF, and the first full pay-per-view I remember watching was SummerSlam 1992. And as soon as I saw Brett versus Bulldog, that was it. I was well and truly hooked from that point, and I always admired the technical guys more. I did feel a fallout of wrestling a little bit in my teenage years, but then over here, they had the wrestling channel. In the mid-2000s. Also, prior to that, I'd started buying ECW VHS tapes back in 98, and then that got me back into the what WWF and WCW were doing at the time as well.
Yeah.
And the thanks to the Wrestling Channel is why I started getting into the more independent stuff and the Japanese stuff and women's wrestling, and it really broadened my horizons. My favourite wrestlers all time, I've got to go with the likes of Benoit, Guerrero, current Mr. Perfect as well, is up there with all time, along with Bret Hart. Current, I'm going to sound again like an indie fanboy again, but it's people like Cesaro, Neville, Christine, Zayn, that I've seen grow up and evolve and turn into what they are on WWE TV. Daniel Bryan was at the top of that list for a long time. And obviously we'll get more into him a bit later on.
Yeah.
And I could go on forever who your favourites are. See, that's not you touching the indies or Japan or wherever. So, but mainstream wise, you can't beat those guys. And Hideo Tami as well. I think he will come really good in NXT. He's just unfortunately, as he was getting momentum, the shoulder injuries took him out of the picture.
Yeah, unfortunately. Hopefully that's on the mend soon. He's having a few issues with it by the sounds of things. Okay, let's move on to which promotions do you follow. Now, I'll ask you this one first, PK, because it could take you a bit longer than us.
On the British front. I'm not including the ones I work for, because that's even more biased than that would be normally. But ICW, Progress, I always like to keep an eye on what they're doing. I'm going to see the Progress show in Manchester on Sunday, which I'm really looking forward to. Then you've got the likes of obviously still watch WWE, even though I prefer to watch NXT compared to the main roster product. Evolve, I've got a close eye on at the moment. Ring of Honor, I did go see the TNA house show, but I wouldn't say I follow them. Then Japanese wise, it's Pro Wrestling Noah, even though they're having some troubles at the moment. I still remember how good they were in the mid-2000s, and I still keep hoping they're going to pull themselves out of this funk that they're in. New Japan Pro Wrestling and Dragon Gate.
You've not missed anything there.
Nothing I can think of. Unfortunately, the list of ones I work for is getting so long now, I can't mention half of them in there. But in the British stuff.
I think we'll give you an opportunity to mention that a bit later on, depending on how we're going for time. Let's jump to Kai. Which promotions do you follow?
I have never been shy to admit that I am mainly a WWE guy. It's not that I haven't tried other promotions over the years. I've tried out TNA. Nothing's ever seemed to stick. But mainly it's because of timing. And because I really don't have, there are not enough hours in the week for me, at the moment at least, to follow much else except for the WWE and NXT. But if people do suggest matches to me that they see on the indies, I will check it out. I mean, and also, I've had fun the last couple of months following my local indie promotion, Lincoln Fight Factory Wrestling, who have a new YouTube show, Fight Factory Weekly, every week on their YouTube channel, which is really good. It's something that I've never been invested in indie wrestling, but it's been great meeting some of them and speaking to them and seeing that, and following them on Facebook and stuff and seeing the passion that they have, and how they're all, a lot of them are academy guys, on the way up. And some of them, I'm sure, have a really bright future.
Absolutely. No, that's the thing. And you know, the indie scene these days is a much coveted position for the WWE to start scouring and start finding their next talents. So it's more vital than ever to start getting yourself known, presentable on the indie scene, getting yourself a decent repertoire of matches and getting your moveset all built up, getting your character developed, so that they can then snap in and sign you up and get you in a great big working contract, hopefully down the line somewhere.
Oh, definitely.
But just to answer that question from my perspective, yes, I watch WWE. I'm still, at the moment, tentatively, still watching TNA. I'm not sure how long that's going to last. I've given them until the end of the UK tour to fuck their ideas up. I will say that last week's show was better than it has been. It was much easier to watch, less painful, less drawn out. So hopefully that's a good sign, but we'll see. And I've also got myself watching Lucha Underground very solidly over the last year. And now, Kai, I have to ask you, take kind of your homework from last week. Have you watched Lucha Underground?
Not yet. And I did say this to you the other day. I said I'm not going to have time to watch it by next week's show. However,
you may have said that.
I did. I'm sure I did. Because I've
you
had,
may
I've,
have said that.
I've had no time this week. I've had no time this week,
don't care.
Honestly.
Don't care.
So we.
Don't care.
I will get round to it because it is something that I've heard nothing but good things about Lucha Underground. Don't care.
Every
who are
week,
you, Devil
Vamp? It's amazing. Every week. That is one I did forget myself. Like, that's probably my favourite TV-based wrestling product at the moment is Lucha Underground by a mile.
It just sounds very... from what I've heard, it just sounds completely different to any other wrestling product, and that's what's kind of bringing me the interest in.
Look, if you can put together a show that's getting the fans interested and pissing off Jim Cornette, you're doing something right.
Because it's a TV show that happens to have wrestling, which is where, which is why it stands out so much.
Absolutely.
It's not a wrestling show.
It's almost like hour-long mini-movies, kind of, and the number of storylines and plots that are getting covered in 1 hour is quite incredible. They're getting a lot of balls in the air at one
time.
Are
they just an hour show?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I will make sure, right, this is my promise to you now, I will watch it this weekend and we'll talk about it next week.
So you've only got two so far. There's one that airs tonight, so that'll be available sometime tomorrow.
So that'll be 3 hours. I might not get through it all, but I'll definitely make sure I've watched the first one.
Just you get on to it
next week.
It.
Definitely.
I'd like to hear. Good. Right. Let's move on to the second part of Paul's email. If you had to build a wrestling version of Mount Rushmore, which four wrestlers would you build and why? Now, his choices for that would be The Undertaker, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, and Andre the Giant. But what we're going to do is we're going to pause on that there, and we're going to come back to that a bit later on in the show, and we'll do a proper segment based on our Mount Rushmores. And I'm interested to see if we can actually sway anyone's opinions on who should be in that.
It's brilliant, isn't it? We're the European Uppercut podcast, yet we've had someone ask us about an American football and Mount Rushmore. I'm only pulling your leg, Paul, don't worry. Please keep downloading.
Anyway, so that's for Poffy's, but he's got a PS to extend this email even longer. Have you guys ever thought about doing a show on rebooking a past pay-per-view by switching around the participants, matches, or results to make a PPV better than it was, but only using the wrestlers that are actually on that card? Just a thought. It's not something I've personally thought of doing, but it's certainly something we'll take under suggestion, and we'll think about that for a week where we're looking for a bit of nice content to play with.
Yeah, that's definitely a good little content bit that we can use in the future.
Yeah, something to think about and chew on. So we'll keep that in mind, Paul. Thanks for sending that in. We appreciate all the emails. Anyone else wants to send us some, send it to eurouppercut@gmail.com. If you've got any feedback or any of the things we've just discussed here, send us a tweet at the EU pod or drop us an email as well. Thank you very much for those guys. Keep up the good work. We appreciate it each week. Now, Kai, it's time to give you the reins for a little bit.
Oh, this segment is becoming longer and longer every week.
And you made it what it is. It's time for this. The one that got
away. Ah, I had the news lined up. Let's get back to the one that got away because I remembered that this week. Yes. For anyone who was a first-time listener, the one that got away is our little segment because we realise that every week there is a story that gets away straight after we've come off air. Literally, guys, it is hilarious every week, but it used to kill us so much. So we just decided to take the piss out of it. And this week, it's a story that I think I missed last week, but it came out at 1:12 a.m. on the 4th of February, so that'll be just after, a couple of hours after we came off air. WWE working on big plans for multi-week network series to focus on lighter weight wrestlers. That's hopefully coming on the WWE network over the summer. It says details are still sketchy and plans will likely change or could be nixed. And it's all about wrestlers. They're thinking about having a tournament over 10 episodes with unknown wrestlers that haven't appeared on WWE or NXTV before. A bit like a Japanese style tournament. And they're hoping that they might even add some what they're calling hot indie guys. Not the way you're thinking, Kiwi, with some WWE development talents and use the show as a way for Manny and Andrade, who was La Sombra, to make a big debut on the show.
So what do you guys think about this story? PK, let's start with you.
I think it's a brilliant idea. There's so much talent out there on the indies that people aren't aware of. Even like some of the older guys who are known for the high flying style, someone like a Dave Crist from the Irish Airborne, who's been around for a long time, but he's still one of the better high flyers out there. And it could also be a good chance to work with other wrestling schools as well and promotions. So like if there's like working with Evolve and someone like Timothy Thatcher comes in, then a couple of people who work with Thatcher and in his training environment, try and get them a bit of exposure as well. They may not be ready to be signed, but at least if they get that exposure when they are ready, people aren't going to be completely unfamiliar with them.
I can see this as being nothing but a good thing for the industry as a whole, really, because look at it this way, right? They can have in their mind that this La Sombra guy is going to come in and he's going to be the big star that wins it. But if someone in that tournament picks up a lot of steam and a lot of social media interaction with people and people get behind him, they could change their mind and sign him as well. And also for the guys who aren't successful and go back to the indies, they've got something else to put on their resume and say, look, absolutely, I've done this on national TV, on the WWE Network. And it keeps WWE's eye on the indie product. Legend, have you got anything to add to that?
Just to add, for those who don't get signed, also what they've also got is a chance to get that polish, the TV camera awareness, the audience awareness that the WWE will teach them, the improved mic skills and others, because they will work on all that with them in the performance center. So even if they don't manage to get signed, they're going to get cultivated, developed and brought forward in their skills. And that can only be a good thing for anyone. And for those that do get signed, chances are it will be more than one person if they do. Four, possibly five even, if they see guys that have got that talent and that skill, and certainly at least they very much have a prospect of having that, then they'll be interested in keeping them on board, get them a performance centre properly full time with a view to getting them onto NXT television. So there's so much to be gained for these guys. If you're one of those guys out there, you really want to be keeping your eyes out for any opportunity to get in there. So that's just my opinion.
Yep, that was nice, quick and simple. We all seem to like it. What do you guys think? Get in touch with us at the EU pod and let us know. But I think we should now hit the next soundbite.
We certainly should.
It's time for the Nutso Knockout News. Hello
and welcome to this week's Not So Knockout News. Jerry Lawler has announced that he is supporting Donald Trump's campaign to be president. Wow, he's really taking this new heel turn seriously. How many weeks have I been doing this now and you've never done that?
I've been planning to do it for ages, but I kept going, no, wait, I'll wait another week.
Enzo and Cass and Carmella's main roster debut is apparently imminent. New Day, how you doing? Steve... Not after every one of them, come on.
No, I'm not, I was just doing Jeff a little bit.
Steve Austin's new network podcast guest will be The Big Show. The show will apparently run for 48 hours to briefly run through his heel turn history. Now on to the face turns. Finn Balor has injured his ankle at an NXT live event. It's weird announcing that a demon is injured. Usually in wrestling, it's the injured have demons. WWE played a video multiple times during Raw, encouraging fans to come to WWE events dressed as their favourite stars. Either WWE has changed their minds dramatically, or, wait for it, the dirt sheets might not actually be as true as we think. Damn! Bull Dempsey and other lesser-known NXT talents were released this past week. Have fun at Burger King, kid. Try not to eat all the Whoppers. There is talk of bringing NXT back to the UK this summer. I will definitely be there if this is true. Now, just before we came on the show, it was announced that Titus O'Neil has been suspended for unprofessional behaviour. well, WWE, with this and Mark Henry's losing streak, your Black History Month is going fantastic.
It's time for Dick of the Week!
Goes to the absolute knobhead who thought that it would be funny to chant hey, 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 goodbye during Daniel Bryan's retirement speech. Thank God security got hold of him before he got any TV exposure. I could go on my usual tirade on why you deserve this award, but to be honest, I'm done talking about you. If it wasn't for the Walker rules, I'd be calling you much worse. But you, sir, are a dick.
Dick.
And that's all for this week's Not So Knockout News.
Well, there's some interesting stories in there. Where do we go? Where do we start on this one? Let's start with Jerry Lawler and supporting Donald Trump. Fuck's that all about?
I've not got a clue. I know we don't like to go political on this show, but I think everyone can agree that, oh my God, this is just weird. But it came up, and I knew the Dirt Sheets had done this for a reason. They put in the title of the article, WWE announcer supporting Trump's campaign, and literally 90% of the comments on Lords of Pain were, I came here thinking it was JBL. But literally, but then again, as some other people pointed out on wrestling sites, JBL's probably a little bit too smart but to be supporting Trump. But Jerry Lawler, I just didn't expect that one at all. Right, so let's move on to another news story. What about the Steve Austin podcast, The Big Show, with the next guest? What do you think about this, PK?
Are they really running that low on guests? The after results of The Big Show. So many more people I'd rather see interviewed on the Austin podcast.
I literally think...
Daniel Bryan on there?
I know. I think a lot of people said that this week. But I do agree that I think that there are better people, but I think Daniel Bryan is someone that it would be better to have a few months at home just to get everything sort of straightened up in his head. Yeah. But yeah, it's an interesting one. The Big Show, though, it could be an interesting interview, but it's not that... I'd rather have seen Ric Flair do a live podcast and Big Show do a pre-recorded one than that way around. But let's move on to another story. Finn Balor on the injury list.
Yep, unfortunately.
What do you think about this legend?
I think it's a bit of a nightmare situation to be in your NXT champion being injured, and it must be really frustrating for him as a talent. It must be really, really pissing him off, because he was having such a great run, and to be hampered by an injury like this, and I hope to God that it's a quick healing situation, because you don't want to be out when you're at that level, but they're going to have to make some swift decisions as to what they're going to do. It really depends on where they were at in terms of their taping schedule as well. I've not checked on where they were at with that.
By all accounts, it's all been taped up to Dallas, or it's at the very least the major matches have been set, so it's going to be an interesting one. It's my big concern with them using that coup de grace double stomp. It's so easy just to roll your ankle doing that.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, against Apollo Crews last week, he actually busted out the Bloody Sunday, and it looked like a really big, impactful finish.
Mm.
And it's a safe move. It's just another variation on the DDT.
Yeah,
it's a safe move. So why he can do it on bigger guys. He's proved it by doing it on Crews. So if anything, I hope he just switches over to doing that, because he's going to extend his career longevity just by that simple change.
And I think the thing about that move is the only thing they really need to change is the name, because I don't think they'll be able to use Bloody Sunday in terms of thinking about their audience.
Yeah, they're not allowed to call it, did they?
They didn't call it anything, did they? They went, no. He's pulled something out extra out of the barrel to try and be
what's that?
Yeah.
Now let's quickly, let's finish up on this with Titus O'Neil. This has just come out. He was the last person that you would have expected to be suspended for unprofessional behaviour.
Now, I'm not been able to see this footage yet, because it was pulled from the network. I tried to watch this last night, but it was shown on my screen.
I've retweeted, if people want to go to my, and we'll retweet on the EU pod page as well, I've retweeted a GIF that someone's put together of moment, so you'll be able to see it there. But PK, have you seen this either?
Yeah, I've just seen the gif floating around, and it's I can see why
it looks
suspended under the impression under professional conduct, because it looks quite bad because Vince has got a stride on and he gets pulled back.
Yeah.
By Titus. Right. And the cameras were rolling at the time. It's not like they were in the halls at the back and he just grabbed him to get his attention. So I can see why they've gone, okay, people have seen this, we need to make an example. But it's a bit extreme suspending somebody just for getting the boss's attention, so to speak, after the show's ended officially and it's like an extra little segment that they're recording.
Yeah. I saw it and I kind of went, it looks a lot worse on the GIF than it did actually at the moment, because it looked like Vince McMahon was smiling about it. And I actually commented to myself, I was like, oh, they must be really good mates then behind the scenes if Titus O'Neil's got the sort of, you know, balls to do that to Vince McMahon on live TV. But then obviously, I don't know, whether it's Vince behind this suspension or not, maybe he's been advised that he has to suspend him. It's not looking good, and that's someone who's really worked hard to build a really, really good image. So as much as I'm not a fan of him as a wrestler, as a bloke, he seems like a good guy.
Yeah, I'm just watching the GIF now. I'm just having a look at it. I'm trying to work it. Did he try to pull him in for a hug or something like that?
It was sort of like a play fight, sort of grab him and pretend to punch him sort of thing. But I can see why. And maybe Vince McMahon's just gone on a power trip and gone, he's made me look weak on television.
Yeah, if you look at the folks standing around and they're all like, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm not sure. This is the sort of thing where if Titus O'Neil was to get fired tomorrow, we'd love to see his first sort of tweet or shoot interview about it, just to know what's going on. We'll find out about this in another 5 years and probably find out that the real story behind it.
Yeah, certainly.
But I think that's it for the news, really. We ain't got much time left. Well, I haven't anyway, so I think we should move on.
I think we should as well. Poor Titus, that's all I'm going to say on that.
This is Europe's number one professional wrestler, Grado. It's your cell. Look, if you're down, if you feel like shit, I'm telling you, what you need to do is listen to the European Uppercut Podcast. That's right, the European Uppercut Podcast. I'll say it 3 times, the European Uppercut Podcast. It's the best podcast in the world, apart from The Art of Wrestling, Stone Cold's, JR's, Chris Jericho's, but it's definitely better than Bauer and Pollock.
Now, let's take ourselves back to Monday, and a tweet came out from Daniel Bryan, and basically saying that he was planning to announce his retirement on Raw, and he would explain what was going on there. Bit of a disappointing situation, but what happened there was everybody started going, oh, is it a work? Is it a work? Is he coming back?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe he's checking out his contract. Oh. So many different bits of speculation and confusion as to what was really going on. But to be honest, was this the one where this was going to be a work? To me, I just felt it was real from the start. I said that a few times over the course of the day. As it happened, yes, it was. It was real, very, very real. Kai, how did you feel it played out?
It was very strange about how I felt about all this. I took a day till after I'd seen his retirement speech as well to not tweet about it, because I didn't want to sort of give my thoughts without hearing the full story. And after watching Raw and his retirement speech, and also speaking to Kiwi as well, I realised that actually he has got out at the right time. I think that, and when you look back on his final, because I kind of sat there and went, he's not been able to go out on his own terms. He's not been able to, you know, go out with a big match. And then I look back and I think, look, he won the WWE World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania 30. Then he got that horrendous injury that a lot of people wouldn't have been able to come back from. But he fought to get back from that and then get to WrestleMania 31 to win the Intercontinental Champion, becoming a Grand Slam champion. And then you look back at his final two matches. His final singles match was Sheamus versus Daniel Bryan on SmackDown. And that was that bloody brawl that we all heard about in the spoilers. And that made me go watch SmackDown for the first time in a year, because I'd heard about how good that match was. Then you go to his final match, which was a couple of weeks later, and it was him and John Cena, the biggest star of the past 15 years versus Tyson Kidd and Cesaro, two of the best people to ever step in that ring. You can't... Yeah. That's a brilliant way to go out. He was able to get past everything to come back for that one little final run. And I think that, you know, he's very grateful for that, as he says.
Yeah, gratitude was the key word during the speech. And I thought the whole segment was really brilliantly played out. He really put himself, you know, front and center in front of that crowd, told it like it really was, had a little bit of fun with the crowd as well. You know, it's his last chance properly to do that as a talent, as he said. And he really, really made the most of that opportunity to say goodbye to the fans from the wrestling talent perspective. And I thought it was just a really, really great piece of television. Really enjoyed it. Pulled your emotions in various different directions during the whole portion as well, which was really good. And that, to me, was just something that we'll see those clips again and again and again, PK.
Yeah, definitely. I thought the way they handled everything was great. And it's obviously since it's official and he's retired, he's done an interview for ESPN today.
Yeah.
And he has actually admitted that while he was trying to get re-approved to wrestle again and get medically cleared, he was hiding post-concussion syndromes that he was having.
Kai was telling us today.
And you see that passion in someone like that, and it's that what they're willing to do. But I'm just glad that he himself has identified, I can't come back. He has still gone out. He had a really good run, better run than anybody ever expected him to have.
Yeah.
He's the most over baby face in the last 10 years outside of someone like a Stone Cold Steve Austin. It got to the point where he could not be heel if he tried. And it takes a special talent, especially someone who was written off as too small to do that. And I've been a big fan of his for years. When I got into indie wrestling, the first match, independent wrestling match I watched was Low-Key versus Bryan Danielson.
Yeah.
And that was it then. I was hooked.
Yeah.
And I saw him wrestle in Liverpool in 2006 for Ring of Honor to unify the heavyweight and the pure wrestling titles against Nigel McGuinness, and it's one of the best matches I've ever seen, not just live, but ever. And this was before he evolved and before he changed. And when you look back at the stuff he did in WWE as well, like look at Team Hell No, that should not have worked. But it did. there's not been anyone in a long time that has the audience side that has identified with as much.
Yeah. I mean, you've actually just touched on a question I was going to ask you, which is where did you kind of first come across Bryan Danielson as he was at the time? And, you know, what were your earlier memories of him? So you've kind of touched on that. And what this also takes me to some of my memories of him and how WWE utilized him. They certainly used him for a couple of guinea pig moments as well. If you look back at his time in NXT when he did that promo, a lot of it wouldn't have got away with doing that promo, and it certainly, you know, made for a bit of engaging television that we all enjoyed watching. And then what happened with the Nexus, the day that they told them to go out there and cause havoc, when they tore apart the ring, ultimately ending in Daniel being suspended, albeit, you know, under whatever agreement they maybe had with him, because he wrapped a tie around Justin Roberts' neck. You know, a couple of guinea pig moments where they got a bit of free rein to do, so he got a bit of free rein to do what he felt was going to be entertaining to the crowd. A lot of it wouldn't have got that privilege, and it says a lot about his personality, his character, that he was allowed to do that.
It's like I tweeted the other day that actually Daniel Bryan changed the way that I actually viewed wrestling, because when it came to when he debuted on NXT, that was the sort of first time that I sort of saw guys like that, and I thought, actually, this John Cena guy, you know, guys like John Cena, Batista, even Randy Orton to an extent, the larger-than-life characters, they're not the be-all and end-all of what it means to be a wrestler. And it was Daniel Bryan matches that I remember watching. That Daniel Bryan versus Chris Jericho match, though it was quite short on their first NXT show, it was one of the matches where I sat down and went, wow, I really enjoyed that match for the wrestling.
Yeah.
And it was, and also seeing him with Michael Cole when he went round and he was hugging everyone on the WWE Network's thing after Raw went off the air, he went and hugged Michael Cole. And you know, and I've seen from seeing what Michael Cole's been tweeting as well, they are very, very good friends. Ever since they worked together in Daniel, Michael Cole was Daniel Bryan's first ever feud in the WWE, and the fact that that just sort of goodbye thing at the end of his career thing, and how he put on Twitter, "It's been a pleasure putting my voice to your moments," was just really, really nice. Another guy who, I can't remember the name of the referee, an old WWE referee, has put an article up all about Daniel Bryan, and it just sort of showed, it gives a real, I'll have to send it to you so that you can tweet it out. I've forgotten the name of the referee. However, he talks about how fans should stop asking for that one more if there are guys like Daniel Bryan, and he mentions Kurt Angle, who he has seen tape up any injuries that they've had.
Yeah.
And as soon as they get out of that curtain, those injuries have disappeared. It doesn't matter. They're performing for that crowd.
Yeah.
And he's saying, just think about it, because there are guys like Daniel Bryan who will, if you ask them to come and do one more match, he will come and do one more match, even to the extent where it's not in a good place anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. He broke the mold as well. When he put you in mind of, hang on, these smaller guys can really go. And if you look at the hiring decisions they've made over the last few years, there'd be no Finn Balor, there'd be no Neville, there'd be no Sami Zayn, there'd be no Seth Rollins.
Apollo Crews,
Dean Ambrose. Yeah. There'd be none of those guys.
Samoa Joe probably wouldn't have come to WWE, because even though he's a bigger guy, he's still an indie guy.
Yeah, exactly. And like, he broke the mold, and the actual, when you think back as well to the reason why I even carried on watching that first series of NXT when it first started, was the match he had with Jericho on the first episode, and then when he cut him, when he could let loose on Mike and do that promo, that proved to people he wasn't just a good wrestler. He had charisma and he had character, and he ran with everything that he got.
Yep, absolutely right. He certainly stood out a lot bigger than his 5'8" frame. It was always good to see him in the ring. His mic work was fantastic. He proved himself time and time again. And we saw that in the highlights we saw on Raw. Every single one of them were great. And I'm sure if you tried, you could think of 100 more. So that speaks volumes.
At the beginning of his career, his mic work wasn't fantastic. But when he stepped out there on that first episode, when he got paired with The Miz, and he turned around and did this promo about snap or tap, that still, I can remember that promo, because I went, look, it's not the most polished thing in the world, but it's kind of, there was just some sort of likability about it. The way that he smiled, and with this smile of, they know I'm not good at this. I know I'm not good at this, but I'll prove it in the ring, and hopefully you might like me. It was something that just sort of connected.
But that's the thing, though. That's where he started. But by the time, you know, he'd been in the main roster scene for, say, even three or four months, there was clear development, clear growth, clear character building going on. And that just grew and grew and grew year upon year. And that in itself just shows you the kind of guy he was. He was putting his time in behind the scenes, building on his skills, working on his mic skills all the time. And even, you know, how he used the moveset he had over time as well was great. A few times I thought to myself, don't do those headbutts. But, you know, it's the kind of guy he was.
One of my favourite promos he ever cut was when he was leading up to his SummerSlam match with John Cena. And they were stood there face-to-face in the ring, and he cut that promo saying, I'm a wrestler.
Yeah.
I'm not pretending to be this. I am actually this.
Yeah.
And it was just the passion and the energy. And that's the other thing as well. It's proven that. Like, I was fine for the entire speech. It was an emotional speech, but I was fine throughout it. Mm. What got me was that photo that got posted, and it's him backstage, huddled down, obviously genuinely devastated and emotional with Brie consoling him.
Yeah,
that was what got me. Like, when he's that passionate, that's what being retired did to him.
And I have to say, when his music came on Raw and he just started to appear down the ramp, the pop that he got just sent amazingly huge goosebumps across my entire body. I was just like, whoa, it really got my attention, really got me focused and paying attention to what was going on. That alone says a lot about how he was appreciated by the fans.
Look at WrestleMania 30, the biggest moments of his career.
Yeah.
The volume in that stadium when especially when he made Batista tap.
Yeah.
The fact it was Batista who took the fall made it even better.
Absolutely right, yeah. Just going to stop a wee minute because Kai's got to run. Kai,
yes.
Take the opportunity to say your goodbyes.
Yes, thank you, everyone. Paul, I will answer your Mount Rushmore question. I'll do it for my final thoughts next week.
I don't want to just pass it over to Legend and get him to read it out, because I want to talk about it in a bit more in-depth. So I'll do that on my final thoughts next week. Thanks, guys, for listening. You can find me on Twitter at HWIR. You can find my radio show Squabble Box on Siren 107.3 FM in Lincolnshire, or on the DSJMP network. Thank you for having me on again, guys. I'll be here next week, but I've got to run now because I'm going to go see Ramesh Ranganathan. So hope you all have a good end to the show. See you, guys.
So as Kai goes and nips away to his clay modelling class, we'll continue with this show, PK.
I'm still listening.
Dear, I knew you were listening. Anyway, just to finish off what we were saying there, Daniel Bryan, great career, as short as it was, and I'm hoping that we get a fantastic DVD out of this so we can rush out and buy that. But also, I've got the real belief that the WWE will do right by him, find something that's a good role that he'll enjoy, that he'll get his teeth into, that, you know, they'll look after him in his future. So fingers crossed for that.
He'd be perfect as an agent, because one of the things he was best at, not just the technical side of wrestling, but telling the stories and making people care. Yeah. If you've got someone like him helping you put your match together, you can't go wrong.
Absolutely right. So fingers crossed that we get a good future from out of the back of everything. Going to move on, and let's jump back to the email we got from Paul Fraser earlier, who was asking us about who we'd have in our Mount Rushmore. Now, just kind of quickly to remind you, PK, his four were The Undertaker, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, and Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
Four great big characters from all the years of WWE/F. What are your thoughts? Who would you have as your four Mount Rushmores?
Well, I've approached this from a slightly different point of view, because
I have a feeling you would.
Because my big influence is the independent wrestling scene, which is heavily influenced by the work in Japan. So I've done a Japanese pro wrestling, Mount Rushmore. And up there, I would have Mitsuharu Misawa for all his contributions to wrestling, branching off from New Japan and creating Noah.
Yeah.
No pro wrestling Noah without him. Kenta Kobashi, again, around the time of when him and Misawa were active, they had new five-star classics. Jushin Thunder Liger for pretty much inventing cruiserweight wrestling and 90% of the moves that people still use today.
Yeah.
And someone a bit more recent, but someone who definitely has earned the respect, is Hiroshi Tanahashi. He's still active in New Japan, but he is getting towards the end of his career now. And I've lost count of how many 4.5, 5-star matches he has had over his career. And he is the John Cena of Japan. He is the most over wrestler in Japan, bar none.
Actually, remind before we finish this show, I want to chat to you about a couple of things to do with Japanese talent. We'll come back to that. Interesting low lineup, and quite a high fly in Rushmore compared to the four that we got from Paul.
That's the thing about this question that I love, is the fact that you could have... I could do a WWE one, I could do an Indies one, I could do, but because of all the different influences we've all got, and
that's
the wrestling that we enjoy. Like, I just happen to really enjoy technical high flying stuff, and I always have. I've even going back to when I was a kid, I always gravitated to the guys like Bret Hart rather than the Hulk Hogan's.
Yeah, that says a lot actually when you think about it from that perspective. So I was thinking about mine this afternoon, and I put together a short list first of all. I thought, how am I going to get this down to just the four? So what I did is I kind of used a kind of process of elimination, and the four that I decided to go for have different influences in different ways over their years, but they are all guys who have been through the WWE at one point or another. I will do my honourable mentions first. The other five guys I had on the list, I had The Rock, I had Sting, I had Hogan, I had Macho Man, and had Roddy Piper. All five guys I thought of that could potentially be on that list. But for various different reasons, I went with four other guys, and two of them fit in with what Paul said. So I'll do those two first. The Undertaker, I've got an almighty amount of respect for Mark Calloway and everything that he's done for the industry. It's no secret how much of locker room generally is behind the scenes and what he does to help others. Let's jump back to the early 2000s, what he was doing to put over new incoming talent. John Cena will tell you himself exactly how that works. Just a definite one for me would be The Undertaker. I also agree with him and would have Stone Cold in there just for what he did in his years in the ring. For someone who was really not getting a great showing in his WCW, ECW days, turned that into a huge character in terms of Stone Cold Steve Austin, managed to tuck away his time as being the ringmaster, which was very instantly forgettable. So what he did to Stone Cold certainly puts him on that list for me. But two other guys I've gone for, these are the ones that I'd more like your opinion on, PK. First one I've gone for is Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, I can see that. Just that purely as an influence on the business standpoint, and the fact that even in when he wasn't active in the ring anymore, he was putting all his time and effort into raising the next generation of talent. I can definitely agree with Dusty on that.
Right up to his death, he was working on the next generation of talent, and that says a lot about what his mindset, his gift of giving that he just seemed to have. And just because he didn't like something he did doesn't mean he wasn't willing to help you learn from it, progress it, and grow into something much better. And that was, you know, when he did sadly pass on, we got a lot of that out of the footage we saw from NXT and stuff like that. So definitely Dusty Rhodes, much respect for the man and what he did, and definitely have him on my four. The last one is the one that I think will get a little bit of reaction from some people and could be seen as contentious. But
okay, I think I see where you're going.
It's a man who I think, if it wasn't for him, would the industry be where it is right now? And that man is Vince McMahon.
Yeah, okay. For everything you can think about Vince as a human being,
yeah,
you cannot fault him as a businessman and as a visionary for wrestling. Like, there wouldn't be these big global states and global companies without him. They'd still be siloed off in their little territories, and people wouldn't get to witness what we've had. And also the Attitude Era, the most successful point in the wrestling business ever.
And let's bring into play a little thing known as WrestleMania.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. What he's done with WrestleMania over the last 30 odd years is absolutely spectacular. The amount of money generated from that for WWE and for the host city is just phenomenal. The number of people traveling worldwide from multiple different countries, you just can't argue with what he's done for the industry. And I think to me that when I was thinking about influential characters, that really stuck out for me. And that's why I'd put him in my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I can agree with that as well. Like, I think when you think about where WrestleMania came from to where it is now, the fact that cities are bidding to try and get WrestleMania because they know how much revenue it's going to bring in.
And absolutely, they're all pitching sweeteners these days as well. It's not just that they're putting a great pitch about money generated and what the city has to offer. It's like, well, we'll give you a couple of million as well just to sweeten the deal. And that alone, you know, that says there's a lot of money involved and a lot of value for the cities. So, that was that. Actually, when I was planning this, I actually thought about doing a kind of a jokey four to break it in. I'm going to tell you who they were now, but I should have done this. I should have just gone for it and actually said my four were going to be Kane, Goldust, The Boogeyman, and Bill Goldberg. But as soon as I said Bill Goldberg,
I was laughing expecting for Cena or Orton in there, to be honest, if you were doing a joke, you were.
As soon as you say Bill Goldberg, everybody knows you're lying. dear. But that's my four. And I think, you know, you could argue every which way as to who should be on that list. There are probably 100 different names that you'd add in there.
That's it. Like, people could put Ric Flair on there. They could put like Brian Pillman on there again for revolutionising and the cruiserweight style of wrestling. Ron Simmons for being the first black heavyweight champion.
Yeah, there's so many different people. Fabulous Moolah.
Yeah, even someone like, if he wants to go to like this, to that sort of extent, sort of like contributions, even someone like a JBL.
Absolutely.
For the commentary, the fact that he was this like beer drinking like brawler, and then he completely changed his character.
Granted, even go back before to Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
Yeah. Like, yeah, granted, like, that was the lowest the wrestling industry has been in a while when he was champion, but yeah. you needed people to keep that company afloat, and those people were Eddie, JBL, Cena, Orton when he was first starting to break through. So it's you needed those people, and filled his role perfectly.
Absolutely right, absolutely. Anyway, Paul, I hope you enjoyed listening to our different options for Mount Rushmores. And Kai, as he said, is going to give you one next week. If anybody else wants to let us know their Mount Rushmores, please tweet us them. We'd be interested to see who you've got. And might even, if you've got any good ones, we might bring them up next week on the show. So send us those into the EU pod, please. Let's just move straight into final thoughts, Paul. Anything you want to bring up this week?
I just wanted to say thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure as always. And my next gig commentary wise is again TNT Wrestling in Liverpool. We've got our first show of the year. We've got chairs match for the title. We've got a four-way match to crown the first extreme division champion, so that more fast-paced cruiserweight style wrestling there. We've got a fantastic women's match on the card, and the show top to bottom looks great. Tickets are £10 in advance through skiddle.com or £12 on the door. If you are in anywhere near Liverpool or you can travel to Liverpool, it's going to be a really good night out.
Excellent. A couple of things I said I wanted to quickly ask you about in terms of Japanese talent. Okada has come out and said he will never work for WWE. Do you think that's a wise move?
I think if anyone's going to be able to get away with it, it's Okada, because he is the next Tanahashi. They've effectively passed the torch now from Tanahashi to Okada as the man. He had a really negative experience when he was coming up and working for TNA.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it may change if word gets back to him from Nakamura. It's great here. You could really give it a go.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he is going to be the man in New Japan for the next 10 years. Easy. Yep. So he's got a really good thing there. So why rock the boat if you're happy? Nakamura is going is because he couldn't get above that level. He was going to be IC champion forever.
I did see someone reference him today as the Japanese John Cena, which I thought was quite bizarre.
I'd say more Tanahashi is the Japanese John Cena, but I'd say more... Okada is more, he's more the Japanese Daniel Bryan in the other than the fact that he's a heel, the fact that he's the one people wanted to take over for so long, and every time he'd get so far, he'd win the belt and then he'd drop it at a big show and people get really frustrated. Mm. That sort of feeling, but now he's there, he's at the peak, he's the man.
And the next question I wanted to ask you, last week we were chatting about Nakamura, or Nakamura as Kai was calling him. I'd have to say Funaki just for the sheer humour of it. We're talking about Nakamura and his upcoming arrival in NXT and how that could benefit or not Hideo Itami when he returns from injury. What are your thoughts on that? Does it benefit him, or is it going to be enough to brush him aside?
I don't think it's going to be enough to brush him aside completely, because when someone is that talented, it's very hard to disregard him. But they're also very different types of wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Nakamura is, for as good as he is technically and as good as he is at the wrestling style, he is Mr. Charisma. He's Freddie Mercury, Michael Jackson, and all rolled into one. And so they'll have very different matches, they'll have very different styles. So I think there is room, especially in the more international product that WWE has become, for both of them to do well. And also, there's the size difference between them as well. Like, obviously, Nakamura is not a small man. He's well over 6 foot. And I can't wait for Nakamura and Zayn at that Dallas NXT takeover. That's going to be absolutely
brilliant. Yeah, and do you think them announcing that match kind of foreshadows what's upcoming in NXT?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a passing of the torch moment, and Zayn will end up going main roster. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to win the NXT belt again. He's had it. He had the big moments. He can now move into going onto the main roster. Probably the Raw after Mania. Or I keep hoping that he'll actually get a Mania match against Owens, That would be incredible.
See that? Oh. I still have that triple threat thought in my head. The two of them and AJ Styles. It's the one I've got in my mind.
That, again, that would be absolutely amazing as well. I think that, and that, but that's the way I see it going. Like, that's just that passing of the torch and get. I know they've obviously with Finn Balor's ankle, who knows what's going to happen. But again, spoilers if anyone hasn't read them. But it's Joe who's going to be getting the shot in Dallas, assuming Finn's okay to compete.
Yeah.
So, or the only other thing that they could do if Finn can't compete is turn that match with Nakamura, Zayn, add Joe to the picture to make it a triple threat, and then make that for the vacant title.
I mean, at this stage in the game, we have got quite a bit of time for them to make decisions like that. And with the situation, as you've mentioned, with Balor, they have got to make a few decisions as to what they're going to do for the longer term, going into the next set of tapings as well. So, and if they have got any plans of anybody going up at WrestleMania time, they need to put everything in place. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what they do over these next 2 months.
Yeah,
but that's all I'm going to say. Now let's move on to the main thing. I want to bring up my final thought this week, and that was just do a quick plug for Discovery Wrestling. You've got a show here in Edinburgh next Thursday at the Jam House. They've got Tommy Dreamer lined up for that. I was hoping to go along, but it's just clashing with a few things I've got going on. So unless I can manage to shuffle something, which may piss my oldest son off, so I probably shouldn't, I might have to give it a miss and just wait for the March show where they've got Ricochet and Angelico coming along.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to those guys being in the country. I think I'm going to try and get to the Southside show that Angelico is on. I think it's Angelico versus Will Ospreay on that show, so that's going to be nuts.
Yeah, we've got Ricochet and Helico, I think Killshot's the other one that's coming, and they're making kind of a lucha themed night. So it'll be more kind of British talent they're going to be mixing it up with, but I'm quite curious as to who they're going to put in there.
Definitely, that could be good, that.
Yeah, so I'm going to keep in touch with the guys here, find out more of what they've got planned for the card. But that's all for this week here on the European Uppercut. Please email us if you can to EuroUppercut@gmail.com. Let us know any thoughts you've got in the world of wrestling. Drop us a tweet to @TheEUPod. And please visit our website, dsjnp.com. It would be much appreciated. Check out the other shows here on DSJNP, including Kai's Squabble Box, the Wrestlecast, 10 to 1, and the Tuts Experience. Additionally, check out the other shows also on the Trending Topics Network, including Spanish News Table, Tim and Tom Show, NFL Easy Picks, Old School and Movies, and Anything Goes, so much more. Don't forget to check out allwrestling.com week in review as well. But that's all for this week. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the European Uppercut. We'll catch you right back here next week. But until then, as always, the living legend has now left the building.